can be freed from material attachment. Knowledge leads one to attain the ultimate perfection of life and to see oneself as he is. The Svetashvatara of Upanishad also confirms this. Tameka Nidavati Ritchameti. Simply by understanding one's spiritual position, or by seeing oneself as he is, one can be freed from material entanglement. In various ways, the seeing of oneself is described in the Vedic literatures and it is confirmed in the book, in the Bhagavatam, Purushasya Atma Darshana, that one has to see oneself and know what he is. As Kapiladeva explains to his mother, this seeing can be done by hearing from the proper authoritative source. Kapiladeva is the greatest authority because he is the personality of Godhead. And if someone accepts whatever is explained as it is without interpretation, then he can see himself. Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami the real constitutional position of the individual. He said directly that each and every individual soul is eternally reserved to Krishna. Jivara Sarupai Krishnara Nityadas. Every individual soul is eternally a servitor. When one is fixed in the understanding that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and that his eternal position is to serve in association with the Supreme Lord, he becomes self-realized. And this position of rightly understanding oneself cuts the knot of material attraction, kriya granti vedana. Due to false ego, or false identification of oneself with the body and the material world, one is entrapped by maya. But as soon as one understands that he is qualitatively the same substance as the Supreme Lord, because he belongs to the same category of spirit soul, and that his perpetual position is to serve, one attains Atma Darshanam and Hridaya Granti Vedana, self-realization. When one can cut the knot of attachment to the material world, his understanding is called knowledge. Atma Darshanam means to see oneself by knowledge. Therefore, when one is freed from the false ego by the cultivation of real knowledge, he sees himself, and that is the ultimate necessity of human life. The soul is thus isolated from the entanglement of the 24 categories of material nature. Pursuit of the systematic philosophic process called Samkhya is called knowledge and self-realization. Excuse me, self-revelation. Om Agyanatum and Anasyakyan. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Srinivasa Kaushalya Sutarine. One problem that we have in trying to understand what self-realization is that we always habitually think of the self as separate from Krishna. This happens when we consider ourselves as fruitive workers, as conditioned souls struggling in this world with our mind and senses to please ourselves. Naturally, we consider ourselves as separate from Krishna. The self exists in of itself. And even when we take to spiritual life, when we take to Krishna consciousness, our intelligence can still be polluted with the conception of thinking we are separate from Krishna. In other words, Krishna is up here and I'm down there, and therefore I can contemplate myself as separate from Krishna. And in this way, I'll have a healthy understanding of who I am. That is impossible. Just as you cannot conceive of sunshine as separate from the sun, similarly, we cannot consider ourselves or understand ourselves if we think we are separate from Krishna. Even when you talk about consciousness, that is becoming very popular in scientific circles today, the new field they call consciousness studies. After many centuries, the Western world has woken up to the fact that if we cannot understand consciousness, how do we really understand anything else? Because it is through the possession of consciousness that one becomes aware of everything else. So if we don't understand the facility or the medium that allows us to be conscious of things, how do we understand things? Because actually things don't exist in themselves, from your point of view. They simply exist as perceived by your consciousness. So if we don't understand what consciousness is, what kind of science do we have? What kind of knowledge do we have? Of course, Srila Prabhupada was way ahead of his time. Therefore, in 1966 or so, he titled his society the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, letting you know from the very beginning that one must understand consciousness. And furthermore, it's not enough simply to understand consciousness as it seems to exist in an individual entity by itself. No, consciousness is always in relation to Krishna, just as the sunlight is always in relation to the sun. In your everyday language, you never say, "Oh, look, coming through my window is the shine." No, you always relate the shine to the sun. Coming into my window is the sunshine. But when we say consciousness, we actually feel comfortable and justified to discuss consciousness as if it can be separate from the source of all consciousness. But that is impossible. The more we understand that we cannot conceive of consciousness as separate from Krishna, the Supreme Consciousness, the more we understand what self-realization is. And then we can appreciate there's nothing outlandish by Lord Chaitanya's statement to Sanatana Goswami, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, every individual soul is eternally a servant of Krishna. Our consciousness cannot be separated from Krishna. Even when we think that there is no Krishna, I am living without Krishna, that consciousness is also Krishna's energy. It's simply his illusory energy. How can we get away from Krishna? Prabhupada gave the example that you can no more get away from Krishna than you can get away from the sunlight during the daytime. Now, there may be some clouds in the sky, but that doesn't mean the sunlight has desisted. The clouds only cover a tiny portion of the sky. And anyway, regardless of the fact that the clouds are there, the sun is always shining. If you just go above the clouds, you'll see. When you get on an airplane, you'll see. There can be so many clouds, but above the clouds, the sun is shining so brightly. So how can we get away from Krishna? Impossible. Just as the sun is always shining in the daytime, similarly, we're always with Krishna. This reminds me of one prayer by Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. Lord Brahma says, and this is a very important point, it gives you deep insight into what self-realization is. Lord Brahma says that Ajnana Moksha, Bhava Bandha Moksha. Excuse me. Ajnana Moksha, Bhava Bandha. Ajnana Samya, Bhava Bandha Moksha. That both the conceptions of bondage and liberation are outside the scope of true knowledge. He says both are false understandings. Both bondage and liberation. You say, how can that be? Lord Brahma explains that, look at the sun. When you are situated on the sun, there is no question of day or night. Why is that? Because in order for there to be night, there has to be no sunlight. And in order for there to be day, there has to be nights that cause you to be able to divide things into day and night. But if you're on the sun, there's simply light all the time. So Lord Brahma explains that similarly. For the soul, there's actually no question of bondage or liberation. The soul is always established in its inherent perfection and pure glory. So, actually, the concepts of bondage and liberation are external. Very wonderful verse explained by Lord Brahma. Also in the Bhagavatam, in the chapter entitled A Rainy Season in Vrindavan, in the 10th canto. You'll also find it in the Krishna book. It is explained that sometimes the clouds cover the moon, and the clouds become very glittery, it seems, because of the moonlight shining through them. Therefore, in the same way, the false ego seems to be very enthusiastic and very lively. And the foolish person thinks, oh, my material existence is full of zest and vigor and enthusiasm. But actually, whatever light, whatever energy
the false ego has, the false self has, is actually coming from the soul. But we don't see that. We become enamored and caught up with the reflective light that's in the false ego. In fact, we think the false self is very vivacious and very zestful. But actually, the false ego simply serves to block or pervert the energies of the soul. We think we become so attracted by the seeming liveliness of the false ego. What's going on, in fact, is the false ego is perverting or diminishing, blocking the energy of the soul. Just like someone who doesn't know, they look at the moon and the clouds in front of the moon, and they just basically concentrate on the clouds covering the moon. Oh, how shiny those clouds are, how full of light they are. They don't understand that the clouds are simply covering the moon. A more intelligent person will focus on the original glory of the moon. So, it is explained in this chapter how when the clouds cover the moon, the clouds seem to have a life of their own, a light of their own, but that is not so. Similarly, when the false ego covers the pure soul, the false ego seems to have a life of its own, a light of its own, but that is not so. We must see beyond the coverings and not become fascinated by the reflected light in the clouds or the reflected energy of the false ego. So these are nice verses to help us understand what is self-realization. In the 11th canto, you'll find Uddhava asking Krishna very, very important questions. Questions that we should learn to ask. One thing we'll be surprised at is that the Bhagavatam is not simply a book of answers. The Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses, and they are a series of questions and answers. You'll notice in Srimad Bhagavatam that everything is based on dialogue between Shukadeva Goswami and Prithvi Maharaj, between, now we have Lord Kapila Dev and his mother, between Sita Goswami and the sages of Naimasaranya, between Vidura and Maitreya, or Vidura and Uddhava, one dialogue after another, and dialogues within dialogues. And these dialogues, they're based on questions and answers. Now, due to our current Western cultural training, we're always wanting the answers. Just like when you flip through a phone book, you want to look up a number, get a phone book, and you, okay, where's that person's number? So we also bring that kind of mentality to our approach to spiritual literature. When we read the Bhagavatam, we consider, this is a book of answers. It's got all the answers. Okay, I've understood. Actually, though, we'll be surprised to consider the point that the Bhagavatam is a book of questions and answers. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is too. Bhagavad Gita opens with a question in the first verse of the first chapter. Kimakorvata Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra is asking. Sanjaya, what are they doing out on that battlefield? I'm a little bit afraid that because the battle is taking place at a holy place of pilgrimage, I'm afraid that my sons will become pious and they won't want to be rascals anymore. I'm worried. It's taking place at Kurukshetra, which is a tirtha. I'm worried about the sinister effects of the holy place on my sons. I've got them inspired to be complete dacoits, more or less, aristocratic dacoits, aristocratic criminals. I've got them inspired in that way, and now they're fighting on a place of pilgrimage. What's going on out there, Sanjaya? What are they going to do? And as you know, Sanjaya was not on the battlefield. Neither was Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, although he was a Kshatriya, a warrior, he was blind. Therefore, he did not partake in the fighting. Besides, he was old. So in any case, Sanjaya was not there. How did he know what was going on? By the grace of his spiritual master, Vyasadeva, he could see what was happening on the battlefield, even though he wasn't there. Currently, scientists are very fascinated by this ability to see things from another place. They have given it the name remote viewing, and they think that this is symptoms of extraordinary prowess, when actually, devotees, we know these things are not very interesting. In fact, in the whole text of Bhagavad Gita, you don't see page after page discussing this ability to see things from another place. It's just considered routine. What is the real message of Bhagavad Gita? That is, how to understand Krishna and how to understand the self in relation to Krishna. So, Bhagavad Gita is also a series of questions. It opens with a question. Arjuna has his questions. Krishna answers them. Bhagavatam is a series of questions and answers. Why don't we see it that way? By discussing with devotees, I found that I've come to the conclusion that in Western culture right now, we have forgotten how to ask proper questions. We think automatically, I know where to look. Just give me the answers. Now, if you talk to, for example, the guests who come here on Sunday, you'll be astonished when you start to probe to realize they actually don't know where to look. And therefore, when you give them the answer, they actually many times can't recognize it. And you may get a little frustrated. Here it is. It's right here. Here are all the answers. And their minds are over here, or over there. Their intelligence is caught up in this way, caught up in that way. Why is that? Because they haven't been trained how to ask proper questions. They don't know what to look for. It's just like if I was very determined to look for a Melbourne in Western Australia. I could be very sincere about my looking, but I'm looking in the wrong place. First, you have to know where to look, and then you will find. You know the example in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya gives about if you're looking for treasure and you're looking in the wrong place, you'll get into so much trouble. If you look on one side, you'll find the dangers of mental speculation. If you look on another side, you'll find the dangers of fruitive activity. If you look on another side, you'll find the dangers of mystic yoga powers. Look in the right place and find bhakti. So, the more you start to try to give instruction in a very friendly way with people who are curious about Krishna consciousness, the more you try to give them your association to help them understand Prabhupada's books, you may be very shocked to realize how splayed out their intelligence is. Like Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Bahu Shaka Hinantascha, their intelligence is many branched. It can't focus on one thing. It can't identify what is the ultimate goal. Just like you see in the Sanskrit today, Jnana, Nishesa, Artaya, knowledge for the ultimate perfection. Now, if you tell people that they have no knowledge, they say yes, yes, but they can't accept that because they've gone to school so many years, they're watching television, reading the newspapers, they feel they know something. But the problem is, what they consider knowledge, we do not consider knowledge. You may know how to make so much computer technology. You may know how to design mass transit systems for the urban population. All these things you may know. But if you don't understand who you are and what you are a part of, what is the whole and what is your relationship with the whole, then you have no knowledge. So that is our basic disagreement with the so-called civilization of today. They actually have no real knowledge. And you'd be surprised, it's a very tough point for a lot of people to accept because they've been packed with all kinds of understandings which they equate with knowledge. And we are telling them that is not real knowledge. And then you sit down and try to present the answers to them. Here it is, it's right here in this book. This is the situation. And they can't see it. Why? They can't even focus on what you're saying. Their mind is here, they're everywhere, because they don't know how to ask proper questions. That is a result of growing up in a materialistic society. You cannot inquire properly. So, I found, my own little efforts, that it takes great effort not only to give the answers, but also to teach inquiry, how to ask the right questions. Now, you may notice, if you make a study of Srimad Bhagavatam and look at all the questions, they will teach you what to ask for, what is important. If you focus on the questions asked by, just like Devahuti in the past chapter, she says to Kapiladeva in chapter 25, I'm sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses, and that because of attachment to these senses, I've gotten into so much trouble. Now you please, you teach me how I can get out of this situation. Please dispel my great delusion. I've taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person with whom to take shelter. Now, I therefore inquire from you as to the relationship between man and woman and between spirit and matter. Every question in the Bhagavatam teaches us what we should be inquiring about. It's not that we should just read the Bhagavatam as a catalog of answers. The Bhagavatam teaches us where to look, what to inquire about. Uddhava is asking Krishna in the 11th canto, what is it that actually experiences material existence? Now, whenever, most of the time in the Bhagavatam, whenever a question is asked, you'll always notice that some truth is asserted and then a further inquiry is made. It's not like so many people like to ask questions today. They just minds all over the place. What about this? What about that? This and that. They have not one bit of firm ground to stand on. This is the result of living in a demoniac society. You have no basis, no solid ground to make another step onto more solid ground. Everything is just up in the air, speculation. Your mind is totally run over by thoughts of sense gratification. But the Bhagavatam questions, most of the time, always presuppose some firm ground in the absolute truth. And then the devotee asking the question wants to go deeper. Just like Devahuti. She says, I'm afflicted by my senses because of them. I'm in the abyss of ignorance. You are actually a bona fide shelter. You are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence. Now I'm going to ask you a question. In other words, I already know some things. We're not lost in the world of complete speculation without any kind of absolutes. Some things I know are a fact. After all, we are human beings. We are supposed to know the difference between matter and spirit. We're supposed to know we're not the body. So those things we can depend on, but I need to know more about Krishna. Uddhava asks questions of Krishna in the same way that there's no doubt the pure spirit soul is innately full of perfect knowledge. There is no doubt that the pure spirit soul is luminous, all pure. And similarly, there is no doubt that the material body is lifeless and inert, unconscious. So what is it that actually experiences material life? It can't be the spirit soul, because the spirit soul is pure and always established in its pure glory. It can't be the material body, because the body is lifeless and inert. So how is it that material existence actually goes on? Very fascinating question, which causes us to think about what actually self-realization is. Krishna explains to him that because of the false ego, the illusory junction between matter and spirit, material existence is possible. Because of the false ego, one dreams, I am this body and this world is my world. Krishna consciousness means how to wake up from that dream. For those of you who are Bhagavatam scholars, throughout the 11th canto, you'll find quite a bit this whole statement of dream being mentioned. How the material universe is a dream for the conditioned soul. How the body is a dream. Again and again in so many verses, Uddhava makes use of that. Krishna makes use of it. So it's very fascinating. So, the more we can read the Bhagavatam to understand how to ask proper questions, the more we'll appreciate the answers. Sometimes you'll find, when reading the questions, you'll think, when I ask that kind of a question, why is Vidura, for example, why does he think this question is so important? What's the big deal? And then you realize that if I don't consider their questions important, my intelligence is not focused in the right way. So let me meditate on what they're asking, and then I'll learn what a real question is like. Because due to our materialistic training, things we think are important in no way are considered important by the Bhagavatam. Just like the duration of life. Sri Kaniya Goswami says, Kim Pramachasya Bhavubi, Prokshaya Varanaraha. What is the value of a long life? Who cares if you don't remember Krishna? We don't consider it important at all. But if you just live 1 second and you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that is perfection. Of course, everybody today considers long duration of life the utmost importance. And all their questions are about that. How can I live longer? Where's the best doctor? Where are the best hospitals? Do I have enough health insurance? Will the government take care of me when I get old? How to drag on for as long as possible? Bhagavatam doesn't adopt that kind of standpoint. Therefore, you don't find questions simply about how to live longer. You find questions about how to know, how to understand, how to make the most of one's short life. So we can learn a lot just by focusing on these questions. Then we'll understand that there's no way we can understand the self as separate from Krishna. Not possible. In the second canto, Pritchett Maharaj asks Sukadeva Goswami, I know that matter is distinct from spirit. There's no question that the material body is the spirit soul. However, how does the spirit soul acquire a material body? Yadichtaya, Hechunava, is it Yadichtaya? Is it by accident? Or is there a Hetu? Is there a cause or some purpose? So once again, Krishna Maharaj is teaching you what to ask, how to focus your intelligence. And the answer comes by Sukadeva Goswami. Not necessarily. He doesn't answer all of Krishna Maharaj's questions in the order that Krishna Maharaj asks them. He picks his own order and asks and answers according to his own sweet will. So although the question about how the spirit soul acquires a body is not Krishna's first question, that's the first question that Krishna Maharaj answers. So he explains, Atma Mayam Rate Raja, Prasyanu Bhavatmana. There is no question of any relationship between the spirit soul and the body, except that which is seemingly managed by the external energy of the Lord. And how do you understand it? Svapna drastu evanjasa. Just like a dreaming person sees himself doing things in a dream, similarly, the pure spirit soul, under the influence of the material energy, dreams that I am living material life, I am doing this, I am doing that. All these questions and many more are there in the Bhagavatam. Just by meditating on the questions, we become attached to the Bhagavatam. We think, I could never ask such lucid questions. What kind of intellect do these Bhagavatam personalities have that, first of all, whenever they ask a question, they glorify Krishna, they already state some transcendental truth, and then they're inquiring deeper. I can never do that. You naturally develop great humility. And without humility, it's actually not possible to read the Vedic literatures clearly. Just like yesterday, we were talking to one nice couple, and the man was explaining how he's studying various spiritual paths, of which the Krishna path is one of them, and that he knows God is everywhere, and he's surrendered to God, and that he's always asking God what he can do, and through his intuition, he understands God's answer. So I began to ask him, well, can you tell me something about this God who you committed yourself to? And he could not give me a straight answer. God is above, God is within you, and just somehow or other, by my intuition and my openness, the will of God comes to me, and this is the way I've decided to live my life. So I kept asking him, if you don't have any specific knowledge of God, how can there actually be some kind of relationship? And how can you trust your intuition? What action are you dealing with? Tell me about this God. And no, God can be known in many ways. We can't define him, but we know that God is this and God is that. What is this and that? I asked him. We don't know, but still, with my intuition, I'm trying to do what God wants. So, of course, I complimented him for his sentiment, but I kept trying to point out, where is your specific knowledge of Godhead, of the Supreme Absolute Truth? And then he began to talk about the self, how we have to become self-realized, understand the self as separate from the ego. So once again, I asked him, please tell me about the self. I'm very interested in the self. What is it like? I He could not answer. So I said, you haven't given me a description of the self or God, yet you're talking about some relationship you have. So what we have is an unknown having a relationship with an unknown. And you're using your intuition. So gently I pointed out, this doesn't make much sense. But he had a lot of difficulty understanding this point. He was going to the Theosophical Society. He was going to some place to learn Taoism. So I was very respectful about that. It's very nice you're interested in spiritual understanding. But what are you actually learning? Please, what is this God? What is this self? Tell me about it. He couldn't accept that because he had no specific knowledge of Godhead in the self, that he had missed the point. He couldn't accept it. So then I thought, okay, I have to get a little personal here. He had a very nice girlfriend with him. So, I said to him, now, this is your partner? Yes, no, that's the latest thing. You don't say husband or wife, it's partner. I've learned the laws of modern relationships. Number one, that everyone in the relationship, in the partnership, is equal. Number two, one partner cannot get more out of the relationship than the other. And number three, each partner is free to look for somebody else as long as you do it in a real nice, cultured, gentle way. You always keep your eyes open for something better while you're enjoying the current partner. That's allowed. So, this has been explained to me that this is the part of the Yuga Adharma, the irreligion of the age, that no more husband-wife, because that implies subjugation and dominance. The relationship is like a business in which two persons invest in, and if they don't like the business, the way it turns out, they sell their assets, divide the assets, and then go their separate ways. So I understood. So I said, that's your partner? Yes, my partner. I said, now, you have a relationship? Oh, yes, we have a relationship. So I said, what is it that inspires this relationship? Naturally, it's because you know her specific qualities. You know her activities. You know about her form. Therefore, you feel enthused in the relationship. But otherwise, if you simply said, this is my girlfriend, and she's just whatever she is, and I just use my intuition to figure out what she likes, and I just use my intuition to try to understand her, she's just whatever. I said, I don't think the relationship would go on. She wouldn't be very satisfied. So she was behind him, so he couldn't see her reaction. So he told me, sure, yes, she would be satisfied. I mean, just, you know, she's who she is and whatever, and I just use my intuition how to please her. So she's right behind him. No way. So I pointed out to him, just look behind you. She doesn't agree with you. Then I looked at her. I know what you want. He's got to know exactly how you feel. He's got to know what you want, when you want it, how you want it. Yes. So I pointed out to him, when it comes to your temporary illusory relationships, you're required to have so much knowledge. You want to know who she is. She wants to know who you are. You establish a relationship and work in that relationship. But when it comes to God and the self, it's just vague and whatever, and you use your intuition about what something you have no idea, and then you think this is self-realization. This is God consciousness. This can't be. So actually, that way, he started to understand. Yes. All right. He thanked me. I can see that. So, and then he went off with her. So this is what material nature does to us. If we don't have knowledge of Krishna, it's not that we're just living a neutral life. It's not that we're just living a nice life, but we just lack the ultimate understandings. No. The Bhagavatam in the fifth canto explains, Prabhavastava Abhojajato, Nasana Jigyasa Atma Tattva. If we don't have knowledge of the absolute truth, our human life is defeated. And lacking that knowledge, we're forced to engage in fruitive activities. So here he is. He's a nice man. He comes to the temple. Obviously, he's a special person. But he's speculating about God, the self. It's all so vague, but my intuition will tell me. And then he can walk out with his girlfriend. Okay, thank you. You've opened my eyes a bit, but I've got all the time I need to understand this knowledge. Meanwhile, what is he doing? He's forced to engage in fruitive activity. Lacking knowledge of Krishna, it's not that he's doing nothing. No. She's got his senses engaged. She, meaning on behalf of the Christian energy, she's got his senses engaged. He's got her senses engaged. They're acting. And this way, they're piling up simple reactions. So it's not that, well, so what if I don't understand Krishna? It won't make any real difference. When I do understand Krishna, that time can come, that'll be all right. If you don't understand knowledge of the absolute truth, you will be pushed around by material nature to act in so many ways, and those activities will make you even more ignorant. So basically, we're racing against the material energy. We're trying to get back to Krishna before the illusory energy pushes us into more material affairs, and we lose even more intelligence. We go one way or the other, darkness or the light. And this is why Krishna consciousness has this sense of urgency. And a lot of people, they don't understand it. Why are you guys so urgent? It's just too fanatical. Just take your time. There's so many things to try to understand, so many things to do. If you don't understand Krishna, what is the difficulty? The difficulty is that after talking vague words about God and the self, your senses are engaged in sinful activity. That is the difficulty. You must understand who you are and who you are a part of and what the relationship is. Therefore, in Krishna consciousness, particularly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can read about Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Three stages of understanding. Sambandha means to understand the relationship with Krishna. Abhideya means to act in that relationship. And Prayojana means to achieve the perfection of acting in that relationship. We know, by the grace of the Acharyas, what we should be doing. We know what we are dealing with. There's nothing left to chance. That is why we are hearing so much. We are learning. The more we hear from Krishna, the more we'll have desire to serve Krishna, and we'll lose our taste for just blind ignorance. You would be surprised that people actually don't mind being ignorant. You have to be like that in order to engage in sense gratification. You can't think about it. You just act. The modes of passion act on you. Now it's time to be passionate. And you do it. The situation looks good, looks promising. Your senses look like they're going to get some satisfaction. So you engage. Without knowledge, how can you understand any different? And furthermore, we need experience. Devotional service gives us experience that devotional service is our actual expression, our actual natural activity. So we're not simply dealing with theory. We are dealing with experience, knowledge that burns. That's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita explains that the fire of transcendental knowledge will burn all your sinful reactions. There's nothing theoretical about fire. Therefore, if we wholeheartedly engage in devotional service, hearing and chanting is part of devotional service, we will be blessed with full knowledge and detachment from this world. We will understand who Krishna is, what our relationship with Krishna is, and how to act in that relationship, and we will attain the perfection of that relationship. That is what knowledge is. Not knowledge of how to make a complicated technological society. Not knowledge about how to please our senses better. That is considered ignorance. The more we simply can peacefully hear about Krishna, and then actively go about our day trying to serve Krishna, the more our understanding increases. That is the promise of the Acharyas in our line. That is the promise of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. That is the promise of Bhagavatam. It is not theory. It is not belief. It is not sentiment. It is fact, and any one of us here can realize this fact. So any questions or comments? I've been noticing you have very quick-minded persons here in Melbourne. Not to say other places are deficient, but in terms of the material nature here, just after a few days, I noticed the brains do click a bit at a nice pace. It's very enlivening to preach in such a situation. Yes? Krishna is the supreme controller. If through your misuse of independence you act in a way that Krishna deems you must go to the material energy, then you go. The soul does not exist separate from Krishna, even in its pure state. Potency is always under the control of the Supreme Potent. If you just look at the soul as separate from Krishna, then you wonder, how can this happen? But because the pure soul is Krishna's energy, it's Krishna's system. And if Krishna makes the pure soul with independence, then that independence can be misused. These questions are also in the Bhagavatam. Vidura asked Maitreya the same thing. How is it possible? Pure soul is pure consciousness, never out of consciousness. Due to any kind of situation, how then does the pure soul become involved in visions? And Maitreya explains to them how the whole affair is like a dream or reflection managed by the external energy. In that sense, the pure soul is never never corrupted. And Vidura, after Maitreya has finished, Vidura thanks him. Now all this disturbance in me has subsided. I understand that any problems have simply come about by the arrangement of the external energy. Otherwise, Vidura admitted to Maitreya, this issue is confusing. So we have to study Vidura's question and study Maitreya's answer. Both have equal merit. They'll teach us where to look. And it may not be the way we like to look at things. Similarly, you check out Buddha's questions to Krishna in 11th Canto. It may not be how we like to analyze a situation, but Uddhava keeps asking from different angles. In the 11th canto, Uddhava, for example, asks Krishna, how is it that the seeing the vanity is nitya mukta and nitya pada? No, either way, the same the vanity. Very fascinating. And of course, Brahma's prayer, bondage and liberation are outside the scope of true knowledge. They are false conceptions. The pure soul is always in its glory. Just like the sun is always shining, there's no question of day or night for the sun itself. We just have to meditate on these questions and answers in the Bhagavatam, and they'll teach us to look in the right way, and then we'll be able to accept the answers. But if you, one tendency I notice devotees have is they think of the pure soul as if it's in its own category, separate from Krishna. Pure soul does whatever Krishna wants. If Krishna has made a system in such a way, then it happens. If Krishna gives the soul independence, you have independence. If you misuse your independence, then Krishna says, all right, you are pure soul, but you're going to come under the influence of my external energy. That is how Prabhupada explains it in that question by Vidura. One potency can overcome another potency by the will of Krishna. Krishna has arranged things a certain way. Pure soul is not independent of Krishna. It's not that now I am pure, I'm free of Krishna's control. I notice a tendency for devotees to think like that. It may be a little bit due to our impersonalistic contamination that finally I become pure, or the pure soul. Krishna can't mess with the pure soul. No! It's not like that at all. We're always subordinate. Always. We are tiny part and parcels of Krishna. Yes? Well, we can take a verse of Vishnu Purana. Vishnu Shakti Prabhupada Kichigati Tatapada. Krishna, Vishnu, has different energies. They're basically one department. Everything about Krishna is spiritual, but his spiritual energies can act in different ways. So the Vishnu Shakti can appear to act in three divisions. The internal potency, the living entities who are as spiritual as the internal potency, and the nescience potency. What does the nescience potency do? Avijja Karma Sangyanda. It covers your original glory. It doesn't take away your original glory. It covers it. And fills you with fruitive desires. How's that? Any other questions? Yes? Well, have you ever tried to do something that you really wanted in life, even in the material sense? tried to learn something, whether it's how to swim or learn mathematics? Have you ever really struggled for something? So it required a bit of effort, but still you pushed yourself. Similarly, in the beginning, Krishna consciousness, it seems like it requires a lot of effort, like a child learning how to walk or someone trying to learn how to swim. When you first jump into the pool, you know, your nose gets full of water and you're coughing and your eyes are, you know, filled with water. But still you go on. And after a while you realize it's no big deal how to swim. Similarly, if you just look at your first days in a temple like that, anybody looks at their first years in Krishna consciousness like that, you'll have the patience to go on. One example I like to give, which how people seem to relate to, is why can't you give Krishna consciousness a few years at least to try it out? Wouldn't you give a material relationship that much time?
Oh, yeah.